Thanks so much for listening. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Coda Luna and their baby keepsake castle. I personally just put all of my baby's memorabilia into these little keepsake castle boxes, and they are so adorable, functional, and if you really love organization, then you're really going to love this keepsake box. So not only is it a keepsake box, but it also includes a baby book, and it has space for capturing all of the milestones of your baby's early years. And then the keepsake box itself stores all of the memorabilia that you want to keep. So baby's first socks and pacifier and the little hat that they wore when they came home from the hospital. So this keepsake castle with the baby memory book is more than just an organizational product. It's a gateway to preserving the remarkable journey of new parenthood. So take a moment to visit keepsakecastle.com today and embark on creating a lasting legacy of love and nostalgia. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. We are talking about what it's like to give birth in a freestanding birth center today. I interviewed Vanessa Treister, a midwife at the Atlanta Birth Center. Vanessa is a mom of two, in addition to being a midwife. I had my second baby at the Atlanta Birth Center, which I've talked about in a lot of previous episodes. Vanessa and I talk about how freestanding birth centers differ from hospital maternity units, and I add a little bit about my experience as a patient at the birth center. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Vanessa. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to talk to you. I've been wanting to do this episode for a while.
Me too. I'm so glad that you reached out because it's been on my mind and it's so fun to talk about and for more people to know more about birth centers. So I'm excited to be here.
Wonderful. Well, I totally agree. And before we get really into the topic of talking about birth centers and midwives at birth centers and that whole experience, will you tell us a little bit about you? Give us a little bit of your background and about your family too.
Yeah. So I identify as female, and I grew up here in the Atlanta area, born and raised here, and then have kind of lived here, gone to college at Mercer in Atlanta, and did my nursing degree there. I always knew, even from a pretty young age, I wanted to do something helping people. And then as I started learning more about the body in high school and I took an anatomy class, I was like, this is fascinating. Like, the more I learned, the more I wanted to know. And so from there, really knew I wanted to be in nursing. And then I was dating a guy in high school, and his mom had home births with a midwife. And my mom and my aunt had also had midwifery care and loved their midwives in more of a hospital birth center type setting that was very short run here in Atlanta at the time. But it was just enough for me to start asking questions and realize, like, oh yeah, that's a job, taking care of pregnant women and women throughout the lifespan and newborns and families. That's what I want to do. So finished my nursing degree at Mercer, worked as a labor and delivery nurse here in Atlanta at a busy hospital, and just getting lots of experience of all kinds. And then did my master's and doctoral degrees through Frontier Nursing University based out of Kentucky. And so then graduated, and I worked at a more typical hospital-based practice for about 18 months while I was kind of getting some experience under my belt, and the birth center was getting ready to hire another midwife. I worked there like as a nurse on nights and weekends and anytime I could, just volunteering my free time, until I started at the Atlanta Birth Center in April of 2017. They opened July of 2016, had their first births. So I was that first midwife they brought on after that. And I've been there ever since. So that makes just over 5 years now. I have two kiddos of my own, married with two kiddos. So I've got a 4-year-old, Harper, and a 1-year-old, Bennett. So And I had wonderful midwifery care through the birth center with both of them and just loved my care. So this is all very personal for me, too, in making sure that families really get excellent care throughout this journey.
That's so cool. So you had both your kids at the Atlanta Birth Center?
I ended up having them at home because that's a special like VIP that we do for our staff is we offer to do home births. It's very hard for us to cover. Like that means we're covering three locations, a home birth, birth center, and hospital, because we do cover hospital backup, which we'll get into. So for those reasons, we just can't offer it very often. It's pretty hard for us to offer. But yes, we did. And so it was wonderful.
That's so cool. I was just curious. The midwife that helped me deliver Cooper, she gave birth to her daughter. I believe it was her daughter, her second at the birth center, Stacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that says something.
Definitely. And she's now had one hospital birth, one birth center birth, and one home birth. So just really having a varied, and as you talk to our midwives, they have very varied birth experiences themselves. And it brings so much to the care we give.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes so much sense. And thank you. So I kind of wanted to start out talking about prenatal. Like, what is the prenatal experience like from the perspective of a midwife that works at a birth center? And of course, you have your experience at Atlanta Birth Center. I gave birth at Atlanta Birth Center. I was a patient there. But in general, I also kind of want to talk about what a freestanding birth center is like in the United States versus a hospital birth and a kind of typical prenatal experience with an OBGYN that delivers at hospitals.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the biggest kind of on paper difference is time. One of the best benefits that midwives have is their time. And so just spending time with families, really sitting with them. So, you know, I generally like to ask women, you know, because I have more time, our visits, our initial visits are an hour, and then follow-up visits are 30 minutes for like a routine prenatal visit. We also offer three group visits throughout the pregnancy, and those are an hour and a half. And those are really geared towards education and information and connection, both with the midwife facilitating the group, but also other families that are in the same stage of life as you. So I love to start out a prenatal visit with, how have you been feeling, you know, since I saw you last? And that's both physically and emotionally. Really getting into what are the stressors going on right now for you in your life and what can we do to help support you and your family with that, whether that's food insecurity or work stress or marriage stress or kids stress or just whatever. What can we do? Because we know stress for the pregnant person is important in both their pregnancy experience but in birth outcomes. And then we have time to talk about those physical things. What are those like aches and pains and the heartburn and the constipation? And really, like, there's a lot more relief measures that I think when you've got, you know, the more standard prenatal care from a OBGYN with a hospital-based practice, a routine prenatal visit is going to be about 10 to 15 minutes max. And a new patient initial visit is going to be usually 20 to 30. So there's just not time to really talk about what are you doing for your sciatic pain? What have you tried so far? What's worked? Great. Why don't you try X, Y, and Z? And if that doesn't work, we can refer you to pelvic floor PT. And, you know, like just really making sure that we're helping you feel your best during this pregnancy.
I was just going to say that that was absolutely my experience. And it was so different. Just the amount of time and not feeling rushed and not feeling pressured, like, I better have these questions ready to go or else I'm not going to have time to ask them. And then the difference of the resources and referrals that I experienced being a patient at a birth center as opposed to at an OBGYN office, like you mentioned pelvic floor PT. I
introduce so many people, listeners, TikTok watchers to the phrase pelvic floor PT. They've never heard it before. Very few OBGYNs will talk about it, recommend it, refer out. Usually it's a postpartum thing if that ever even comes up. So that's just one small example, but I agree with everything that you just said. And I wanted to ask, but you kind of touched on already, but I wanted to ask about how is this different from a typical OBGYN? And so you really honed in on the time piece. But another thing that I would love to hear more details about is two things, the group classes that you mentioned, because that was a game changer for me personally in my life. It was such a cool concept for a prenatal appointment. And then I would also love for you to talk about the nutrition review, because that never happened in my first pregnancy. And I couldn't believe that you guys asked me so much about it and cared. So would you please talk about the group classes and nutrition?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is specific for our birth center and how we do it, but a lot of birth centers do some type of either group classes or making sure that you have this type of information as part of the birth center model. So why don't I backtrack our schedule, and a little bit this has changed because of COVID. We found some lasting changes that people really liked. Like, we do our groups virtual now. It used to be a couple of couples. But we found that we were actually able to, it was more convenient. And families really liked it. So, we do a first visit, like I said, an hour long, around 8 to 10 weeks. We will absolutely see you sooner if there's any problems going on. And then we do a 16-week visit, a prenatal visit. We usually do group one right around then. So group one talks about healthy pregnancy. So how do we get this healthy pregnancy that we're all wanting? Like, what does that actually mean? The first part is nutrition. So really breaking down what does your current nutrition look like, and what are areas for improvement? What are your challenges? You know, maybe you're having a lot of food aversions, or maybe a lot of nausea, vomiting, or maybe you're having food insecurity, or maybe you don't have a lot of time to cook, you know, because you're working 60 or 80 hours a week, or your partner is the one doing most of the cooking. So how do we make this healthy lifestyle fit into reality? So really breaking down healthy protein. And the biggest thing I talk about for women is that that increase in protein from usually should be about 75 to 100 grams of protein in pregnancy for most people is one of the biggest changes. And you can do that, you know, myth buster, you can do that with a vegan and you can do that with a vegetarian diet. You know, you just being mindful about, I usually recommend just track it for a couple of days. You don't have to always track it, but just track it for a couple of days and just see where you land. We talk about supplements, making sure you're on good quality supplements. So we really want everyone on a whole food based methylfolate instead of folic acid, prenatal vitamin. We want a good quality probiotic found in the refrigerated section. We know that starting that microbiome and gut health is so important early, and that is our baby's immunity. We want vitamin D because we know almost all people, especially in the United States, are low. We just don't get enough sunlight to really get adequate levels, and that's really important for health outcomes and immune system. And then I'm missing one. Oh, omega. Omega. So some type of DHA or omega. So we're talking about supplements, and then, you know, we can always talk about others. You know, if you're vegan, maybe adding a B12, you know, those sorts of things, depending on what's going on for you. We talk about mental health. We talk about mental health at all of our group visits, as well as individual. We're talking about movement and exercise, and same thing, what feels good for you? We know the goal is 30 minutes of moderate activity 5 days a week, but what does that mean? How do we get that? Maybe that's a dance party with your toddlers in your living room. You know, maybe that's walking the baseball field while your elementary school kids are playing baseball. Like, what does that mean for you? And what do you enjoy? So really talking about those, that's the first, that's another time, I won't say the first, it's another time we talk about these referrals and resources. So therapists, nutrition, dietitians, acupuncture, chiropractic, pelvic floor PT, you know, you name it. We want to refer to those resources where it feels helpful. So then group two, we do later on, about 30 weeks. And that one's really focused on the labor and birth process. Part of this is specific for birth center, more so like, what are the reasons that we would need to transfer to the hospital, both prior to labor and during labor? What does that labor admission process look like? What does it look like if we are in the hospital or need a C-section or any of those sorts of things? But it also talks a lot about what are you doing for childbirth education, and what, that's a great time, I love for, you know, people to really share what classes are they taking, what are they liking, you know, if they've had a baby before, what did they take, what did they really like, doulas, spinning babies, optimal fetal positioning, so all of these kind of things around that labor and birth time. And then what's become one of my passions with my postpartum experiences is group three, which we do around 37 weeks. And that's focused on postpartum. Because what I see is that postpartum is not given much time and attention. And while the labor and birth process is really important, that postpartum time is so vital. And for many families to have preparation around it. And I think COVID has only highlighted that. I think our American culture, I'll say one last thing. I think our American culture is so, it does a disservice for families that we don't have our village in so many setups, so many families that I see don't have that built-in village, whereas a lot of other international cultures do. And I think we see that in our mental health and postpartum outcomes, unfortunately.
Yeah, I completely agree. And not only do we not have that village set up in our culture, but we don't even have the value of the time that it takes for a postpartum person to heal. In so many other cultures, they have the idea of, you know, sitting the month or taking 40 days. Like 40 days is something that you hear over and over and over again in so many different cultures and traditions. And so many other places, the takeaway I get is so many other places around the world value the fact that it takes at least 40 days for a postpartum person to heal from childbirth, however they gave birth. And so, I mean, you're speaking my language, like that's the reason why I created the postpartum class that I now offer online. That's like a self-paced class that talks about all of the postpartum stuff that I wish I would have known, that I would have learned about beforehand, and that is being exacerbated by COVID and the pandemic. And it is, I think it's geared towards probably people more in the United States that just don't have that knowledge. Class three that I took, the third group class, was probably like that seed that was planted in my brain years ago to say, like, wow, there's really a lack here. Like, I want to do something to help, you know, move that needle. So thanks for going over that, what you do at Atlanta Birth Center, that model, and like the why behind it, because I think it's so important. And I'm glad that you pointed out that other birth centers, other freestanding birth centers are similar, but of course everybody's going to kind of do their own thing. One thing I did want to differentiate and ask and have you talk about is the term birth center and what that means, like what's a freestanding birth center. You also mentioned like a hospital birth center. And so I would love to talk about that because my mom was really confused when I was having my son, when I was pregnant. And she knew I wanted to have an unmedicated birth, and she was trying to be encouraging. And she just said, well, you know, honey, like if it gets too tough, like you just get that epidural. And I'm like, okay, so we need to back up and you need to understand where I'm giving birth. Like, you clearly don't know that she didn't realize that when I said birth center over and over and over, I'm going to the birth center. She didn't realize that that was not attached. It was not in a hospital or attached to a hospital or part of a hospital system, that I would have to be transferred. It would be a whole thing to then be transferred and admitted to the hospital if I needed to do that or chose to do that. And so that to me was always this really great example of kind of a mainstream understanding of what's a freestanding birth center, what's, you know, how is it different from a hospital? So I would love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. So this is something that's not very clear in the United States. Part of it is there's no, like, no one coined the phrase, you know, or has legal rights to it, yeah. I should say. So, sure. You know, you have hospitals all the time who say, you know, and I think one of our busiest hospitals in the country here in Atlanta also says we have a birth center, which is, you really have to break it down and clarify. So there are very few accredited, like nationally accredited, in-hospital birth centers in the country. There are a few. They're few and far between. But what we are, and what most people, or I should say the idea of birth center, is this middle ground between home birth and hospital, where you've got the resources, you're generally well plugged into the medical system, but you're not in a hospital. The most birth centers are in close proximity to a hospital, but some parts of the country, they're actually where there's almost no resources. And so it's better than nothing. And so the midwives and care providers know, okay, if I need to transfer someone, it is, you know, let's say 40 minutes to the hospital, you know, and so they know that in the back of their mind. There are birth centers in Alaska in very rural places, you know, and it's very popular there. But we in Atlanta are, we are across the street from a major hospital that has maternity care. And then we are 1 mile away from our backup hospital where we have admitting privileges. And so we are a 10,000 square foot facility. We have 3 birth suites that are like really nice bedrooms almost. I've had people joke like, can I just come for a yeah. romantic evening here?
No, seriously, it's nicer than some hotel rooms that I have stayed in, like honestly, nice hotel rooms.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We have queen size beds, we have big tubs, we have, you know, walk-in showers. You know, we like to, Anjali, our medical director, our midwife director, likes to joke that when she was doing the build out with the architects, the women are like, how many people do you need to get in these showers? You know, yeah, we need the birthing person, their partner, the midwife, the nurse. Exactly. Yes, yes, we need people in these showers. So they're really lovely suites. Just really meant to allow the birthing person to move really freely in what their body needs, whether it's space or more intimacy or position changes or whatnot. So in that way, a birth center is kind of a middle ground between that hospital and home birth. The other thing that differentiates us is we are nationally accredited. So the National Association of Birth Centers has guidelines that we have to follow. And then in Georgia, we have state guidelines we have to follow. Some of those we really don't agree with, but we're working to change those. They're old and outdated, but we'll get there. And then we have some of our own, you know, as midwives and our birth center, what we feel comfortable with. So all of those guidelines really help to keep us safe and give us the really awesome outcomes that we have.
Yeah. That's a really great explanation of the difference. And I really like that. And that's exactly why I wanted a birth center birth, because I didn't want to do a hospital birth again, quite frankly. And I've got lots of reasons for that. And they're personal reasons. And I have no like general ill will towards hospitals or anything like that. And anybody that chooses a hospital birth, that's totally fantastic for them. But for me personally, I really didn't want that again. And I also didn't want a home birth for my own personal reasons again. And so the fact that the birth center was open and available, that was exactly the main reason why I was like, this is what I want. So I really like that explanation. Now, I would also love to hear from your perspective, what typically happens when a birthing person goes into labor with a birth center? Like, how does that kind of work? When do they come in? That kind of thing. And I would also love to hear your perspective of how that kind of differs and compares to a hospital birth when someone goes into labor and delivers at a hospital.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, typical hospital typically is kind of either if you're wanting an early epidural, you know, you can kind of call and come in, you know, kind of early labor-ish. There's usually not too much of a set time. You can call, you know, when your water breaks and come in, you know, anything. There's kind of a low threshold for just kind of coming in and admitting you, because we can always start Pitocin. We can always give you your epidural. We can always break your water, and we can have a baby. We can do these interventions. At the birth center, our goal really is to limit interventions and to, you know, we talk about judicious use of interventions. It's not that we're completely against them. There are a time and a place for that. And that's where that relationship that we've built during the pregnancy is so important, to say, hey, I'm seeing something I'm concerned about. You know, this is what I'm seeing, and I think these would be good options. So typically, if you're a first-time mom, we're really wanting you to labor at home until you're getting to that more active phase of labor, think 6 centimeters-ish. I always get the question, how will I know I'm 6 centimeters at home? You won't. So we talk about the, like, looking more serious in their labor zone and working harder to get through contractions and, you know, maybe being less chatty in between contractions and some of those other, like, indicators. We are generally on the phone back and forth with you, though, as a first-time mom while you're laboring at home. So, you know, checking in, making sure that physically and emotionally, nutritionally, like, you're doing it. You're doing okay. If your water breaks, you know, is baby moving well? Is the fluid clear? Just really checking in on things in that way. We can always bring someone in earlier if there's a concern. But ideally, kind of waiting to admit till more active labor, because we know that reduces interventions and tends to have better outcomes when we can do that. For a second or third or fourth experienced mom, we will err more towards, once those contractions are starting to get closer or get stronger, we really trust people's intuition about that intensity is really picking up. These are feeling really different from the Braxton Hicks I've been having for weeks. Come on in, because I would rather you come on in and have a minute to get settled, because typically we see things go pretty quick. And just have time to be in this space and not feel so rushed, you know, coming in the door. I always joke that I actually really like the birth center both for a really fast birth, because no one's asking your name and asking paperwork and what's your social security, and here you are trying to push out your baby and they're shoving paperwork in your face. But I also like it for the longer labors, you know, where you've got that support and you've got the time and the space that you need. And we never know what our labor is going to bring. So just kind of anywhere in between. It's just really lovely for supporting people and what they're needing. So in that way, I think it's really different. The other thing that's really different is when you come into the birth center and labor, the midwife is the one that greets you. And she may have a midwife in training with her. We do value training this next generation of midwives and having more midwives in our country. So we do work hard to train quality midwives. So the midwife is the one that greets you, and we will do like a short little triage. We have a little triage room. So you may be kind of whatever position has been most comfortable, whether that's standing or sitting on the ball, While we monitor baby for a few minutes on that more typical, what you'd see in the hospital, the continuous fetal monitoring for about 20 minutes or so, make sure baby is tolerating labor, and get mom's vital signs, make sure she's doing well. And then, you know, are you having a lot of vomiting? Have you been able to eat and hydrate? And are you coping okay? You know, like just that total assessment. And then we get her into the labor room if it's time to go ahead and for admission, where she can really just kind of move in and do her thing. And from there, it's the baby is monitored with intermittent auscultation, which is by Doppler. So there are not monitors and wires and cords attached, but really having that freedom of movement, we know that's so important for fancy term physiologic labor, but just letting the natural labor process unfold.
Yes. The ambiance, the energy, and the people, like the birth team, was a striking difference for me personally, who had a hospital birth with midwives. Overall, really positive experience. But comparing it to when I went into labor in the birth center, it was just such a striking difference. It was my midwife, a midwife in training, and my doula got there before me, greeting me at the door, and it was the middle of the night, and it was quiet and dark, and just the intentionality around not disturbing the very difficult work that I was doing was, I mean, it was just ever present. Like it, you could just feel it. And I just felt like relieved when I saw them. I was having a beautiful labor at home. My husband was doing a fantastic job as a birth partner. And then just seeing like, it was like these three angels coming toward me of like, I just felt so held and relieved and just like, all of this is right. All is right in the world. And it just wasn't these bright, stark lights. The triage room, I think, was a little bit bright, but it was like, the voices were very quiet and it was explained, we're only going to be here for a little bit. This is why we're going to do this. Just the whole vibe, to use a Gen Z word, the whole vibe was just different. And then, and then not only did my midwife greet me there, but I don't remember her leaving my side. Do not remember that. So like, even if she did, like the treatment that I got and the attention that I got, I walked away from the experience thinking, I don't think she ever left my side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and then there wasn't a big change of people coming in and out of the room. It was just like her, my doula, the midwife in training, and then there was a nurse coming in and out, and I had no idea. And no clue until after the fact. And I was like, oh, hi, who are you? And I mean, it was kind of like a joke, like, I've been here. Like, I've been like floating around in the background doing things. And that was perfect. I mean, it was just, I was not disturbed. Like it was just, and going back to the niceness of the room, like there were twinkle lights, the ambiance of the room was just like very nice. Like it was just, I felt comfortable and it was almost like a luxurious birth in a weird way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how I would describe it. So like, just to kind of add my own like lived experience, personal memory to what you just described. I mean, I just have to add that in there of like, it was so different. So, so, so different.
Yeah. It's hard to describe this only with words and in a short amount of time, you know, because the words that come to mind are respect. You know, people are respected for their needs, their desires, what they bring. You know, that's what comes to mind as you're describing this, Amanda. And you know, undisturbed. You know, we really want to be just kind of like, our job is to hold space for normal. You know, that is part of the, you know, if we talk about like midwives versus OBs, you know, midwives really believe in the normalcy of birth as a life event, and that our job is to hold space for the body to, and the person to really go through this process and to give support if he or she needs it. And to be on alert for, you know, abnormals, you know, if I'm seeing heavy bleeding or now we've got high blood pressure, you know, anything like that. that's why we're trained and that's why we want trained professionals there. But, you know, most of birth, especially for low-risk people, really, you know, needs very minor to little intervention. And so just really holding space for normal is important. That's an important part of our job. So, and we know that's how people's birthing hormones work best, right? Oxytocin is one of the primary hormones, just like in intimacy. And so if you feel on display, if you feel bright lights, if you feel respected and valued, that oxytocin is going to flow versus the alternative. So
yeah. And the oxytocin can make labor, the labor pains more tolerable.
Yes.
And that was absolutely my experience. It was like, this sucks and this hurts, but it's totally doable. Whereas my first experience, it was not doable. It was not tolerable. So it makes such a difference. So we kind of touched on like who typically is in attendance, midwife in training or assistant, doula, partner and birthing person. I also am curious, you know, how else do birth center births differ than hospital births? And can you talk a little bit more about what happens when baby is actually born, when baby's born, how long the after stay is? Because that's a huge difference too.
Yeah. So you touched on a good point too, who is there? And in COVID times, you know, that's very restricted right now.
Yeah.
So the beautiful thing is right now our visitor policy for labor is you can have 3 visitors plus a doula. So you can have up to 4 people there.
Wow.
Children over 12 do count towards those 3 visitors, but children under 12, siblings, if you have other young children, those do not count towards those 12 people. So, you know, prior to COVID and our pandemic, we had children at births all the time, and it really was a family event. So that was really, really different for birth centers across the country. The nice thing also is that our backup hospital also just adopted this visitor policy. So even if families need to transfer, they can still have their people. So that is important. That reduces a little bit of stress. And then second stage. So as we get more towards the pushing, we're really just following your body's cues. You know, I am sometimes in conversation with the birthing person. If they're feeling like they need some reassurance, then, you know, I can check their cervix to say, hey, yeah, you are completely dilated. That urge you're feeling, go ahead and start, you know, listen to it, and you can feel free to bear down. Sometimes there's some hesitancy there, but if women are just like grunting and in their power and, you know, rocking it, then they don't need permission from me to birth their baby, you know, just do their thing. And I'm here, gloves on, hands poised. So we do offer water birth, which many families do enjoy. So you could be in the tub, you could be in the shower, you can be any position, you know, in the room, standing, hands and knees, you know, you name it. We've got birth stools you can be squatting but supported on. So those are really, really lovely. We then, as birth is getting imminent, we're kind of getting set up. So the one thing we didn't touch on is that these rooms are beautiful. They've got beautiful armoires and, you know, 4-poster beds in one of the rooms. They've got beautiful linens and all of these things. But inside those cabinets, inside those armoires, is all of our emergency equipment. We are always prepared for an emergency. So outside of having blood on hand and outside of having epidurals, you know, we've got almost everything that a hospital has. And so we're really, really well prepared for emergencies. You know, we have our things around. We're set up in case we need it to be in arm's reach if anything were to be, you know, go awry. But like I said, our job is just to be there. If mom or partner or anyone else wants to help catch baby, we love that. Bring baby right up to mom's chest. And really that first hour is about uninterrupted skin to skin as much as possible. That's where baby should be. We know it's best for temperature regulation and transition. And if mom is interested in breast or chest feeding, bringing in milk supply, just lots and lots of reasons, that's where babies are supposed to be. And part of that is also delayed cord clamping, and not just 30 seconds delayed or a minute delayed, but totally just leave it alone. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you know, whatever. At least until it stops pulsating. And then we, as midwives, we are all in the state of Georgia. They do require certified nurse midwives. Not all birth centers are certified nurse midwives. I'll say that caveat. There can be certified professional midwives at some birth centers in the country. But we are trained to do repairs. So we'll assist with any placental birth needed. We're monitoring bleeding closely and very on top of bleeding. And we have medications for postpartum hemorrhage. And then we can do most repairs if there's a perineal tear or anything like that there at the birth center. We have local lidocaine. Our birth center now also has nitrous oxide, the laughing gas.
Yeah.
So if that's feeling kind of overwhelming, then that's something very short in and out of your system in a couple of seconds that helps with anxiety and relaxation. You can inhale a little bit of that while we're doing a repair, and then it's out of your system and safe with breastfeeding, and you can carry on.
That's so cool. For anybody that isn't familiar, a certified professional midwife would be someone that didn't get the nursing degree before becoming a midwife. And so just to differentiate for that. And then the other thing that I'll also say from my own personal experience, and then just being a birth worker myself, a big difference between giving birth at a birth center versus a hospital, or kind of that standard of care practice from an OBGYN office to a hospital in the United States, is this feeling of not having to fight when you step through the hospital doors. Not having to fight. And what I mean by fight is, like, I got to make my birth plan so that people know, like, what I want to do, that I want skin to skin, that I want delayed cord clamping, that I want to be able to push in whatever position I want, that I want to be able to push my baby out in a birth tub or a shower or on a birth stool. Like, that is how I felt. I felt like I had to fight for those things to make it known what I wanted. And there was also just kind of this stereotype that was very much backed by real lived experiences, my own included, that if you put together a birth plan or you ask for all these things, that it may be met with scoffing or disagreement or just kind of this brushing off, dismissing kind of an attitude of, like, oh, please, yeah, you know it's best, right? Okay, we don't do this every day. Kind of that sarcastic idea. And that's why I say the word fighting, because I also felt relieved giving birth at the birth center, being like, I don't even hardly need a birth plan or a birth preferences sheet, because everything that is your standard procedure of care, if everything's going normal, like if there's no complications, everything that you guys already do is exactly what I want. And even if there was something specific that I didn't want or wanted to ask a question about or kind of push back against, it wasn't met with any type of hostility whatsoever. It was understanding, curiosity. Is it okay if I talk to you a little bit more about why I'm suggesting this? Not like, just not this dismissing. So that's, I think, that's just really important. And I don't know if that gets talked about a whole lot when it comes to, like, why would you want to give birth at a hospital versus a birth center versus at home? Like, to me, that's a big one. And I'm not sure that it's kind of on, like, the bullet points on, like, websites, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a great point, because I get that from both ends. As far as people say, well, don't I need a birth plan? I'm like, well, I mean, and that's the conversation I have. It's like, yes, delayed cord, you know, these things you're asking about, this is our standard of care, you know? But, you know, it's also a good exercise to be intentional about what are you wanting. So it's never wrong to make a birth plan or birth preferences. Yeah, you know, we see people coming in just, you know, well, I want delayed cord clamping, can you do that? And I want uninterrupted skin to skin, and I'm like, yes, 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 This is what we're all about. Yes, you know, we do everything right on mom's chest. And really, like, very minimal. We just want baby undisturbed there with you. And then if you want some assistance with breastfeeding in that first hour, we give lots of breastfeeding support. One of the things that you mentioned, Amanda, was that postpartum stay. So that's one of the biggest differences is our families are low risk and they should be discharged stable. You know, and so typically the average day is 6 to 8 hours. The minimum is 4 hours. And we do have some people like ready to go home and then up to 12 hours. And if at 12 hours we're not stable, either mom or baby, then that's generally reason for us to transfer to the hospital because we're needing some additional care. And so for most families, that's one of the reasons they're seeking out our care. They, especially those experienced moms, found that the hospital really was not a restful place for them. You know, even if they wanted some additional support in the postpartum, we can help with resources, whether that's family or partner or postpartum doulas, or there are nurses. And we do a birth, and all birth centers just about do a nurse visit, 24 to 48 hours. So really coming in and checking in on that family. That visit is typically done at home for us in the Atlanta area with this huge, I mean, we have families coming over 2 hours away. So we have a 20-mile radius.
Yes.
That we will come to your home and check on you in your home, which, can I just say, American healthcare, that's like, doesn't happen unheard anymore. Of. And as a postpartum woman, it's the best. Because you don't want to go anywhere.
I didn't want to go anywhere. Like, no. Someone knocking on my door, like, yes. You know, the next day, it was amazing. It was so nice. And I'm actually more like a 30-mile radius, so y'all are very generous with
yes.
that, too.
Yes. We used to be 30 miles, and we kind of had okay. to crank it yeah. down to 20. But yes. Yeah. You know, and I've done some of those visits, and there's nothing more just, like, satisfying than sitting with a freshly postpartum family, either in their bedroom or in their living room, and just seeing, like, that's how you really see. Is this woman resting and nestled with her baby? Is she calm or is she anxious and she's running around and other people are not really helping? And, I mean, you can walk in the home and really get a snap assessment of what is going on. And so just sitting with someone in their home is just amazing. And so it's really a time for us to see how is feeding going. You know, one of the important parts before we leave with that shorter postpartum stay is making sure that mom has a feeding plan that she feels really confident in on how to feed this baby for the next 24 to 48 hours. So if that's breastfeeding at the breast, great. If that's bottle feeding, or pumping or hand expressing and spoon feeding, whatever, we want to make sure that she feels confident to be able to feed her baby. And then that's part of what we're checking in on is how is your recovery going physically, emotionally? Are you getting the support you need? How is baby? How is feeding going? How is everyone adjusting and transitioning? You know, it's important. And we know partners, new partners are such an important part of this. If partners aren't doing well and they're not adjusting well and have the support they need, they're not going to be able to show up in the way they want to. For their, you know, birthing person. So it's important. The whole picture is important.
It is. And then, so the immediate postpartum, like their birthday, that's very different of, you know, 6 to 8 hours, 12 hours, up to 12 hours kind of a thing. I was a 12-hour one because I didn't get the full GBS treatment, which is one of the reasons. Yeah. And it was totally fine. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to go by 12 mm-hmm. hours. I was happy to go home and felt really confident going home too. And the other big difference is that a week later, I came back and had a postnatal mm-hmm. appointment. That's very different. That was very different from my experience and very different from the standard of care in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it just like I was saying with postpartum before, it blows my mind to think that we discharge women from the hospital and say, I'll see you in 6 weeks.
It's crazy.
Absolutely baffles me. I don't understand. So yes, so really big in that postpartum, like stay at the birth center, usually undisturbed skin to skin that first hour or two. And then once mom is kind of getting, okay, I've had my time. Sometimes people really want to know that weight of that baby. We'll go ahead and do this newborn exam right there in bed. So really looking head to toe at this sweet baby. Looking for any anomalies, looking at weight, looking at muscle tone and reflexes and all the things. And then we usually want families to eat a nice big meal, and then we tuck them into bed. We want them to get some really good rest before they go home. So that's another big difference. We know that, you know, because we don't always know what support they're going to go home to, whether that's other toddlers or, you know, just what that's going to look like. So, yes, we hope that this day, even with it being shorter, is more restful than, you know, a typical hospital stay.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes so much sense. So my last question for you is, why are you a birth center midwife and why do you still do this at the Atlanta Birth Center 5 years later?
Yeah. I think there's a whole multitude of reasons. You know, I love home birth, and there's parts of hospital birth that I love. I love us having privileges there at Atlanta Medical Center. So even when complications arise, we continue to care for our families. To think things like preeclampsia or fetal growth restriction or preterm birth, anything like that, we're still going to be your midwives. And still have that like lower intervention care. We still do delayed cord clamping and skin to skin and this advocacy of, you know, do you want these things? As much as possible, even when plans change. So I love that aspect. I think, you know, another like big thing we didn't touch on yet is birth centers have amazing outcomes, truly. And so when we're talking about why choosing a birth center, it's not just for the luxurious feel or, yes, the quality of care as far as just being treated well. But that also shows in the outcomes. And I think that's part of what I'm so passionate about. So our birth center, we've had over 1,500 babies. We are one of the busiest birth centers in the country. And I think that speaks to lack of options in Atlanta and in Georgia, in the Southeast. And with Georgia having some of the poorest maternal and neonatal outcomes, it's could not be more important. We have about a 3-5% preterm birth rate, which is much lower than national or state average. We have about an 8-10% C-section rate, which is much lower than national average. We have about a 3-5% NICU admission rate. And most of those are from those hospital births. Very few of those are from the birth center itself. So really important part of our care is identifying those problems as they're coming up and moving to the right location. Where is the safest place for you and your baby? And then, you know, much higher rates of exclusive breastfeeding, families satisfied with their care. You know, some of these, when we look at these national birth center surveys, just national birth surveys, those factors are really important. I want to briefly mention that if you're wanting more information about birth centers and why birth centers, or how can I find a birth center near me, birthcenters.org is a wonderful resource. And there was an amazing study done from 2013 to 2016 called the Strong Start Study. And it included 46,000 women across the country of various ethnic and racial groups. And these were all women who were under care paid for by Medicaid, which typically have higher rates of complications. These women faced several socioeconomic challenges. Almost half were not employed or in school, and only 15% had a college degree. And more than one third of women reported experiencing barriers to obtaining prenatal care, such as lack of transportation. They also had twice the rate of depression seen in pregnant women. And many had chronic health problems. These women, the study showed that they had just the prenatal care alone, even if they had planned hospital births, because some birth centers do a small portion of planned hospital births. So the birth location wasn't as important, but the quality of care, like we were talking about, just significantly improved rates of preterm birth. C-section rate was 17.5% versus 29%. Gestational age of baby was almost half a week longer. We know small babies are also, you know, higher risk in these lower socioeconomic and Medicaid participants. More weekend deliveries, which tells us less, fewer planned inductions or C-sections, and more vaginal births after C-sections, more than twice, 24.2% versus 12.5%. So even for birth centers are not just for those who can afford it. Birth centers are for all. So at Atlanta Birth Center, we're on the MARTA line so that we can, transportation we know is an issue for many families. We accept Medicaid. We want all racial and ethnic and religious diversities to be included. And we want that in our staff as well to show that diverse community that we serve. So I want the message loud and clear that birth centers are for all, and it's because we know that they improve outcomes. So how can we get better reimbursement, get insurance to cover them so that everyone really can have access?
Yeah, that is such a good point. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I think that that's a question that not a lot of people would think of. Not a lot of people that have privilege would think about that. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. I'm very glad that the Atlanta Birth Center is behind that, and that's part of their mission and vision. And that's part of why it's so important to me and why I still talk about it 3.5 years later.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, and if you are someone with privilege, many birth centers are nonprofit. Atlanta Birth Center is a nonprofit organization. So if you're looking for somewhere to make a charitable donation, this money could not be better used to give childbirth education, to give breastfeeding resources, to give mental health resources, to give, you know, prenatal care and postpartum care. I mean, the money, so little money gets stretched so far because it's really high touch, low technology care. So
I could not agree more. Yep. I totally, totally agree. Thank you so much for just sharing your knowledge and your passion and love for what you do. If anybody listening is interested in just, you know, anything that you talked about and just kind of following you on your journey, where can people follow you on social media and Atlanta Birth Center too?
Yeah. So atlantabirthcenter.org. We are on Facebook and we are on Instagram and our website. Please follow us. We also have free support groups for both pregnant and postpartum women and families. So, and we're hoping to start a partner-led support group. So look out for that. We also have, we call it Mocha Mamas, so specifically for BIPOC, pregnant and postpartum, because we know that that is so important to have that safe space. So those are free and accessible. They're on our website and on our Facebook. So anyone can access those. You can follow me on Facebook, Vanessa Treister, or Instagram, VTreister, @VTreister.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I have loved our conversation, and thank you very much for the work that you do.
Thank you, Amanda, for getting the word out and everything you do.
Thank you so much for listening to the show today. If you liked the episode and would like to hear more, please follow Finding Your Village wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to use the code FYVPODCAST to sign up for the postpartum class at pregnancytopreschool.net to save 15% today.
Thank you so much, and stay safe, healthy, and connected.